Welcome to Ice Time, the Buffalo News' hockey podcast. I'm Lance Lysowski, our Sabres beat writer, and of course, joined as always by Mike Harrington. And Mike, yeah, never a dull moment with this team, with between injuries and some, I guess, unexpected wins, especially when it comes to the one that they had in Los Angeles without Tage Thompson and, you know, Alex Tuch playing through an injury, obviously. But brings us to our first topic. Why not just dive right into it? And it's time to talk about the standings, Mike. I know that the fans don't want it's really funny because, yes, we are early into this season. There are a lot of games to be played. Things can change quickly for the worse. But this is also a reminder, Mike, they could be changed for the better. And although, yes, it is early, the standings matter. And Lindy Ruff said as much before this trip to California even began.
You really want to, right off the top, just set me off here, Lance, right? You just
want may as well dive right into it.
You want to light the wick and let me go. I mean, okay, here's the deal. Obviously, we don't know when people are watching this. In the wake of the Los Angeles victory, the Sabres did move into the second wild card in the East. They did pull within 2 points of Tampa Bay for third in the Atlantic. There's a lot of games on Thursday night. The standings will shift, whatever. The Sabres are 5-2 in their last seven going into Anaheim. They're 9-6-1 since they started 0-3, which is a 97-point pace over a whole season. As you said, Lindy Ruff put the standings up in the locker room on Monday. He was asked after practice, when does the chase start for you? And his answer was, the chase started in Prague, game one. And Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet routinely talks about American Thanksgiving, where 75 to 80% of the teams who are in a playoff spot on American Thanksgiving end the season there. And many teams that are not in a playoff spot in Thanksgiving do not get into the playoffs. And it is a line in the sand. The biggest point I see to say to people, of course, I put up some of these standings points on X the other night, and immediately I got, why are we watching the standings? What a joke. What a homer you are. Who cares about the standings? The whole point of why you play, I feel like Herman Edwards, you play to win the game. The whole point of this is the standings, okay? And here's the other point, Lance, and you and I both know this. If this team was 10 points out right now,
people would care about the standings then.
People would be trading everybody. They'd be firing everybody, and they'd have good reason to. But why would they have that opinion? Because of where the team was in the standings.
Now
the team is in a wild card in 5-2 in the last seven. Everybody's still freaking out about the Philadelphia and Montreal game. You know what? Everybody wins 25 games and everybody loses 25 games in this league. Everybody. The Sabres won 21 games and they were trying to lose.
You mentioned 9-6-1. If they win the Montreal game, they win the Philadelphia game. Think about what the record is then, where this team is at. And of course, yes. Part of where they're in a wild card spot as we speak now. Part of that, of course, you could point to, well, Boston is fighting it at the moment. But that happens. Teams are up. Teams are down. And although,
yeah. You waited 6 years for one of these teams to start aging out, and Boston finally aged out and fired a coach.
And we'll see about Tampa. I'm not convinced that they won't be doing the same at some point here soon, especially if they start to have some injuries and that starts to creep in. But 9-9-1, being at 500, yes, you're in the murky middle of the Eastern Conference, which is a dangerous spot to be. But when you consider this team, the way that they're playing – now that Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is healthy, Tage Thompson is on his way back, they've managed quite a bit of adversity despite where they're at. You think about the trip to Prague was not easy. You think about injuries. You think about losses. Guys underperforming to expectations, whether that's Dylan Cousins or Jack Quinn. Yeah. Things haven't worked as planned for this group. They got a new coach. We all knew it was very clear this was going to be a difficult transition for a younger team to adjust from Don Granato to Lindy Ruff. And although, yeah, Granato tried to address the defensive deficiencies last season, this is a very different style of leadership here in terms of, we've heard the buzzword over and over again, accountability, setting a standard. And Lindy Ruff has shown, if you're not playing well in a game, you're not playing. You know, he's high on one guy one day. Like, you heard about his comments about Jacob Bryson. This is just one example. A week and a half ago, he loved the way Jacob Bryson was playing. Well, he clearly didn't like the way Jacob Bryson was playing in Los Angeles because Bryson only played about 11 minutes. Lindy Ruff's not afraid to shorten his bench. And he's got
It's good.
I didn't like how Yoki Haro was playing either in Los Angeles, just for the record, even though he got back in. Did you look at the Corsi numbers?
Yes.
Yoki Haro was on the ice. Well, I think I wrote it down here. I think it was 35 shot attempts, 29 by the Kings when Yoki Haro was on the ice. Shots on goal, 13-2. I mean, Yoki Haro in power. I don't want to see that pair again.
No, and that's where we'll have the defense discussion at some point, I know. Clearly, Lindy Ruff is trying to figure out who to play next to Owen Power because it just isn't working out right now. They love the Darlene-Byram pairing, but everything else, he's still mixing and matching to find out what works best for this group. But yes, the power play scored in 7 straight. The penalty kill is on a pretty nice run right now, despite not having Jordan Greenway. The 5-for-5 showing against Los Angeles. We'll see how they do against Anaheim and San Jose. But special teams are so key. That is going to help you weather the storm when your 5-on-5 game isn't exactly where you want it to be right now. And that's a big difference, Mike, right? We talked about starts last season, a big issue under Don Granato. The power play, a big issue under Don Granato. Lindy Ruff has fixed those two things. You know, they had a pretty rough week without Lukanen and healthy last, the loss to, falling apart against Montreal and then losing to Philadelphia, of course. But yeah, I think that it is a long season, as we've said, but 500 and sitting in a playoff spot on November 21st, that matters. Statistically, historically, it shows that matters.
And we may not have a season where the playoff cut line is 95 points. I mean, right now it's 82. That's not going to hold. But it may not take 95 to 97 points to get in this year the way things are going if this is going to be a top-heavy conference.
Exactly. We will we'll segue to our next topic. And that really does – we can reflect on the game against the Kings. Of course, we are recording this on Thursday afternoon. We'll see when you listen to this. We always try to make this timely, so if you don't catch it until Saturday, it's going to be okay. But, Mike, a 1-0 win over the Kings when Alex Tuch is playing through an injury, you don't have Tage Thompson, Jordan Greenway is out of the lineup, and half the D-core didn't play all that well. Lindy Ruff really shortened his bench in that game, and Lukanen bailed them out, but winning 1-0 on the road against that team, it's impressive. And those are the type of games, Mike, we've talked about it over and over again. Those are the type of games they lost in previous years. You know, this team hasn't really won those 1-0 games, since in this latest iteration of, this core, post Eichel era. And to do that under those circumstances, it's impressive no matter which way you look at it.
You know, I think the last 1-0 win was the overtime game in Calgary a couple years ago where Markstrom gave the puck away to Thompson in the overtime. You're right. This is a team that has played loose hockey quite a bit. That was a relatively low event game, shots on goal 23-19. Lukanen certainly saved the day. The penalty kill was very good. You can't take 5 penalties. You can't give a team 5 power plays. You're going to lose most of the time. You're going to give up a power play goal or two in that spot. Lukanen did a great job. And there were guys out there, like you said, Tuck. One that jumped out at me, Ryan McLeod, over 6 minutes in penalty kill time. They're going to need performances like that without Greenway in this lineup for a while. And, the other thing that struck me was, again, the 6-on-5 at the end. They've had trouble in that area. They have practiced it a lot. They were still a little passive. It was, I think, the last 2 minutes and 37 seconds. They had a couple chances to clear, didn't get the puck out. There was a great opportunity for Quinton Byfield where it looked like his stick blew up when he was near the net. They were pretty lucky to get out of there without a tying goal and getting to overtime. Lukanen really held the fort there, but those are the kind of games you have to pull out on the road against a good team. And we are seeing a little bit of a weird pattern here where the Sabres are doing pretty well against teams that are in the top half of the standings and not so well against the bottom half. So they're a little, a little full of themselves at times, I think. But L.A. is a good win. Calgary, it's turning out to be a good win. The Rangers, obviously. But then you have losses to Pittsburgh, Columbus, Montreal. So it's a weird pattern developing. Let's see what happens here the rest of this trip with, Anaheim and San Jose. And remember, they lost to Anaheim twice last year. And San Jose is much better. So I think it's a good start beating LA. They probably should have beat LA twice this year. They blew the home opener where they had really rolled LA the first two periods and gave up three goals in the third. But that was a tough game to get through with a short lineup. They're going to need some of these guys back here, especially Thompson, and going to need Tuck to be healthy. But they have to also make sure they're healthy before they come back. You can tell Thompson's being very careful with whatever he's dealing with here. You know, sounds like it's a groin thing, but because he talked about pushing off and after the way he got hurt in Montreal against the faceoff, but they can get these guys back.
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. And I think this is a reminder that fans' expectations of this team and what they think the identity is, it needs to shift. It needs to evolve to what the reality is. Lindy Ruff's vision for the Sabres isn't what it was 2 years ago when this team had 91 points. It's changed. You can't win and make the playoffs playing that way. You are really playing with fire by trading chances the way that they did. And, hey, it was impressive. He's trying to teach them to play a style of hockey, a more structured style of hockey that will allow you to win games like this when you're not scoring goals. Because a lot of nights, Mike, with goaltending and the way that teams are defending nowadays, it is very tough to count on scoring four or five every night. It's just very difficult, especially when you're the youngest team in the NHL. I know that label is so tired, but you're looking yep. at the player. You're looking at the players, though. Like, they are counting on young guys, and I'm going to count Cousins in that mix because, and realistically, he is 22, 23 years old. So Benson, Cousins, and Quinn, usually your second line. It wasn't against the Kings, but they aren't producing at the level that Kevin Adams envisioned and expected. So until that changes, or there's a shift, or there's more scoring from that fourth line, we like the way the fourth line is playing, but they're not doing much offensively. The third line, they had a lot of possession when Greenway was in the lineup, but you can't count on them to really be an offensive driver, especially when their matchups are so difficult. So in these games when you don't have Thompson, Tuck played 22 minutes despite having that injury.
Right.
But it's going to be tough some nights to score goals. So you're going to need to learn how to manage the game, make smart decisions. Because remember, the last couple of years, they ran into the Kings and the Flyers. Those are two teams that stand out to me where, you know, the Kings played the 1-3-1. They don't anymore. And Torts, he's just trying to bore you to death into making mistakes. And
he does a good job of it.
And he does a good job of it. And this team really struggled with that in the past. And, of course, their puck management was horrific in that Flyers game. But they learned from that. They applied everything that went wrong in that game. And they did well against the Kings. You know, Beck Malenstein told me after the game in L.A., like, they will lull you to sleep until you make a mistake. So you got to be patient. That's tough for younger guys. And even somebody like Cousins, that he's got that $7 million contract and that pressure to score. So that could really lead you to make some uncharacteristic errors, force, cheat for offense.
And we didn't see that.
And we're not seeing that from guys in some of these games. It's got to be more consistent. That's the missing piece. But you are starting to see a shift in what, if this team is going to make the playoffs, that's how they're going to have to play. You know, of course, you're going to want them to score. You're going to want them to create more at 5-on-5. Five shot attempts at 5-on-5 and it is not going to be enough in a period. Of course, penalties fed into that in L.A. And, you know, they're in the box as much as they were. You're not going to get a lot of 5-on-5 time anyways. But it's a problem. So
here's two quick points in the wake of L.A. Puck management. You didn't see guys jumpy with the puck. You didn't see the bad turnovers. They were patient. They didn't panic.
The drop passes.
No drop passes. And the other thing is, think of the stat we thought about, Lance, quite a bit under Granato 2 years ago, how the Sabres had, I think, what was it, three wins the whole season when they scored fewer than three goals. There were no 2-1, 3-2, 1-0 victories under Don Granato. There are going to be 3-2 and 2-1 victories under Lindy Ruff. This is not Lindy Ruff fire wagon hockey from 2006 or even 2007. This is more 1999, 2010 Lindy Ruff hockey, starting with the goaltender, starting with the defense, starting with being patient with the puck and not going crazy all over the rink. They cannot win that way. They are not deep enough to win that way, and especially with injuries without Thompson out there. So it's a little bit of a a hybrid style here, but you know, people know what kind of style Ruff wanted to play. And if you think back to those couple of years, that's more what we're trying to see here. He's really not going to be playing a lot of 6-4 games.
No. And this team, I think he recognizes this team doesn't have the offensive firepower, at least not yet, to play the way that really his teams look at New Jersey. The Devils scored a lot of goals 2 years ago when they had that historic regular season finish. And, you know, they go on to the second round of the playoffs. This team, until Quinn starts scoring, until Cousins starts scoring, Benson becomes more of a regular contributor offensively. You get more from McLeod on a regular basis. That fourth line chips in some goals here and there. You're going to have to be comfortable in these low-scoring games, and this team is certainly showing that it's at least taking a step toward being as comfortable as you can be when you're in a very low-scoring tight game. Let's talk trades, Mike, our third topic. Everybody wants to talk about it. Of course, Elliot Friedman was the latest, you know, national reporter to get from Kevin Adams that he's trying to add a top six forward. This is not news. This is something that goes back to the summer. He tried after buying out Jeff Skinner. A deal didn't materialize. Marty Nate just didn't get moved. Some of these other players that were talked about in the summer never got moved. He's still pushing. And I think it does raise the question, though, with where this team is at, what level of urgency should the Sabres have in terms of trying to add? And, well, of course, what type of player or what specific player do you want to see them add? Because I think that's also an important layer to this as well.
Yeah, I mean, clearly there was some thought about you need a top six winger. You've bought out Jeff Skinner. Nate just didn't move. Nikolaj Ehlers of Winnipeg didn't move. How fortunate is Carolina? They didn't trade Martin Natchez the way that season's going right now. Right now, you don't know who's going to be out there from a top six standpoint. I don't think there's going to be a lot of big names, and I don't necessarily think you have to do that. I think what you're looking for is another veteran player who can contribute along the lines of Jason Zucker. You're not going to see big goal scorers move. I just don't see that happening. There's not a lot of trades going on right now. Let's see if things open up a little. Pittsburgh already made one move with Lars Eller. I even talked about it inside the NHL Sunday. You've got to watch what's going to happen in Nashville. They're not trading Stamkos or Marchessault or any of those guys. They just signed them. But they may have to retool their team a little. What about a guy like a Gustav Nyquist, who is on an expiring contract, who's had multiple 20-goal seasons? Is that the kind of player? And I tend to think he's of the same career path as a Jason Zucker, that kind of player Kevin Adams is going to look to add. It's still November 21st. We know how this thing goes in the NHL. These GMs, they're not big on the trigger. They like to wait till March. Now, I don't think a lot of teams are going to be waiting till March this year. I think with this mushy middle of the East, some teams are going to try to make some moves, but it's hard. We'll have to see what happens here. But is there urgency? Yes. I think Kevin Adams has to learn the lesson of a couple of years ago when he missed by a point. I think Kevin Adams understands the urgency for his personal job status if they don't make the playoffs, especially if they don't make it and he doesn't make some moves here. And you just need some depth. Another forward might help. You know, and now we're starting to see, do they need another add on defense? That's another question here we have to figure out is what is their confidence level in this defense core? Like you say, they have two they're pretty confident in Dahlin and Byram. They know Power is one of their rock guys who they've signed long-term. But, boy, the rest of it's kind of a mix right now. And I think there are trades out there to be made. It's just a question of how soon can you get it done.
Yeah, you really have to consider when you're talking about trades at this phase of the season, how many general managers realistically have the job security and the patience with ownership to basically wave the white flag at this point in the season and make that kind of a deal where you're trading away a top six forward and just saying, you know, this isn't our year, we're rebuilding. I mean, Chicago's probably up there, San Jose, but there's not a lot, Mike. A lot of teams, Philadelphia included, ownership wants to win. The expectation, even though, is that while you're rebuilding, is to try to make the playoffs, so there's no real sellers yet. We'll get to that point. Teams are going to go through slumps. They're going to have injuries. Their lack of depth will be exposed. The one player that does stand out to me, hasn't been moved yet, I'm not convinced he will be anytime soon, is Joel Farabee from the Flyers.
Right.
Again, that's a fit. There's term on the contract. So
why would they do it?
And that's the thing. But there's term on the contract. His name has been floated in trade rumors for multiple years at this point. And when there's smoke, especially from multiple national insiders, there's usually fire in terms of at least some interest in moving the player. I think Morgan Frost is going to be moved before Farabee ever does. Yeah. And there is, like, there's an unrealistic expectation in some markets that you still got to win. And you got to fill seats. You got to make money. And, again, like, the league revenues, the salary cap is coming up. So a bigger contract that might look bloated at the moment for a team like the Flyers, they may feel a bit more comfortable with it a year from now when the cap could be jumping much higher than people expect. But I'm with you. I think the real focus here, you don't necessarily need to get a top six forward. I think Jason Zucker is a good comp because you need a middle six guy. Like, yes, Isak Rosén got the call on Monday at the start of this trip when it's clear Greenway is going to be week to week. And although Rosén is a very talented young player, he doesn't have the physical strength to win puck battles and do much of what Lindy Ruff is asking of his players at this point. It's very different from the way the Don Granato coach or, you know, this is how you got to win. You got to be able to forecheck. You got to be able to check. You got to be able to finish checks. You got to be able to win battles. And Rosén's not ready for that. Most of the guys in Rochester aren't ready for that. And you're thinking about the two-way contract forwards like Josh Dunn. Is that really? No, that's not going to move the needle for this team. And you're not looking for another fourth liner. So there needs to be urgency. And that's why Kevin Adams is making the calls. We'll see if something materializes. I'm with you, though. Defense, I'm starting to be convinced.
Right.
They got to do something there. That might be the area. With Samuelson out,
right.
They like Gilbert, but Lindy Ruff clearly doesn't trust Gilbert to play more than 12 to 13 minutes. And yeah, they got it. They've got some third pair options. You need guys to play in your top four. And
here's the other problem, Lance. Here's the other problem in the East. When you look at the standings on Thursday morning, everybody says, "Oh, Montreal and Columbus are terrible." You know, Montreal and Columbus are 3 points out of the playoffs. The entire East is within 3 points of a playoff spot. So no one's selling anytime soon.
Yeah, and Columbus is trying to win they're trying to squeak in. They got enough young talent at this point. Montreal is probably the same way. Like that coach in Montreal, the GM in Columbus, like again, you got these teams with the way the revenues go, you can't afford to have empty seats in the NHL. So they don't want to sell too soon. It really impacts the bottom line. So we'll see where things stand, but you look at Rochester, yes, Mike Leone's doing a great job with those young players, but you can't count on that to really support your depth. And we've seen one injury, two injuries up front, Mike. It really does test. And, you know, Sam Lafferty was on the second line in L.A. I like Sam Lafferty as a player, but probably on your fourth line. All right, last topic. We'll make this one a quick one. I think it's important to discuss, though. Devin Levi's return to Rochester. This was long overdue. It's the right move. It's what's right for the player. It's right what's right for the Sabres. It's what's right for the Amerks. This just makes sense on so many levels. I understand why they put it off, especially with Luukkonen's injury. Now is the time, though. Let the kid play. Let him develop.
Yeah, and I think he obviously played very well in Laval in his first start, won in overtime, was not playing well in the NHL. And I'm just a little confused of what the situation was at the start of the season with the Sabres, because you knew they were taking three goalies to Prague, but they gave Reimer no work at all. And, you know, Reimer probably doesn't end up on waivers. I'm sorry, doesn't end up getting picked up on waivers if John Gibson doesn't have the appendectomy in Anaheim. But it was just strange to me. They just decided, okay, Levi's going to be the number two. Reimer hasn't played in the AHL in a dozen years.
Yeah.
They were going to stash him in Rochester. And so Levi suffers through inactivity. He doesn't play real well. That Islanders game was a disaster. Columbus game, disaster. Philly wasn't great, but it wasn't a disaster. But it was just time for Levi to get regular ice time. And that's the most important thing here. Whether you think Levi is going to be a long-term option or not, you have to get him playing on a regular basis. Even Lindy said that. James Reimer can sit. He can watch. He's a veteran guy. You can throw him in on back-to-backs. They're riding Luukkonen. They gave him a 5-year deal. Levi still needs to hone his game. And the way he can do that is in Rochester. The time of developing players, especially goalies in the NHL, is over. This team has to win hockey games. Levi had to go to Rochester.
You could just see that. I understand to some point being tantalized by the talent of Devin Levi. He is so good in practice. You watch him. He's always locked in. He's dialed in. And that matters to Lindy Ruff. It matters to Kevin Adams. It matters to Mike Bales. And I think those are among the reasons why
They thought, let's give this a shot. Let's see if he can do it. We'll risk losing Reimer. We really believe in this guy. Because you saw those his last three starts in the NHL, when he was in a rhythm after a stint in Rochester, he played extremely well. He is capable. He is capable of playing in the NHL. But what they overlooked is the fact that he needs to be in a rhythm to play in the NHL. When he's not in a rhythm, inactivity, especially for a younger goalie, he's not accustomed to it, is going to impact their confidence. It's going to impact their technique. And we saw it with Levi. It really hurt him. And they did him, honestly. They should have done this a couple weeks ago. Part of it was that they needed Reimer to go on waivers. You can't do it and not have a reliable backup. They get Reimer back. It's time. Levi will be okay. I genuinely believe. Get him a run of games. He can come back. If there is a back-to-back, you feel like if this is all about winning, if you feel like he gives you the best chance to win in a back-to-back and he's in the rhythm and playing well after a stint in Rochester, sure, bring him up. But he can't be a backup. I understand that the Sabres have made some non-traditional decisions with player development and has worked out for their benefit. You know, Paterka's one that really comes to mind where they brought him up to the NHL probably a little sooner than other teams would have. And he broke through. He developed nicely. But then you also have the other side of the coin where Jack Quinn, multiple injuries, that hurts his development. Matias Samuelson, multiple injuries, hurts his development. We can keep going on. Zach Benson's doing really well despite the challenges of being in the NHL at such a young age at his size. But when it comes to goaltending, it's a much more fragile ecosystem for that athlete. And you can't
organizational balance. You now have it. You have Luukkonen and Reimer in Buffalo. You have Levi with Sandstrom or Hauser in Rochester. That's what you need in this organization right now.
You can't reinvent the wheel when it comes to goalie development. No. Okay, it is at all the examples. He will be fine. You finally developed a true number one goalie in Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. It took 6 years, 6+ years for him to emerge as the guy. And of course, it was a different regime that drafted him. I understand the loyalty to the Levi, the real belief in him after what he's done at the NHL level against very good teams. But it was time for Luukkonen to be the number one. They got Reimer. Let's see how he plays in his first opportunity. But yeah, and I think Levi, it's just a perfect situation. You got a young team in Rochester. They needed a goalie like him. Let him develop with that group and call him up when you need him. And he's already in a rhythm. That's it, Mike.
That's all you need to say on Levi. That's perfect because that's what had to happen.
So the Sabres, of course, I'm out in California. They are playing the Anaheim Ducks at Honda Center on Friday night. Second game of the back-to-back is Saturday in San Jose. Macklin Celebrini, Joe Thornton's jersey retirement. So that building's going to be rocking, which is going to be nice. Mike.
Watch out for the bomb cyclone.
It's their bad day. Supposed to be tomorrow. Fingers crossed. So it should be okay. But – no, it's going to be that building hasn't been full in a couple of years now. To see it full and to see some energy in that place with a young team, I'm very curious. The Sharks are playing better. We'll see how it pans out. We'll see when Tage Thompson returns. We'll see how Alex Tuch manages the injury and hey, interesting week ahead. Of course, thank you for joining us. He's Mike Harrington. I'm Lance Lysowski. This is Ice Time, the Buffalo News Podcast. You can find us on Apple and Spotify. And another reminder, we are the only outlet that travels to every road game. So that's reflected in our coverage. You can subscribe online, of course, for a very low rate. Come along for the ride. We'll promise to make it worth your while, not only for Sabres coverage, but everything else. Thanks for joining us. Take care. Talk to you soon.